This is Living Planet.
Okay, so I'm walking through the main market square in Bonn. I'm about to meet Kathleen. Yeah, she's asked me to join her in a shop, and I don't really know why. All I know is that it's work-related. Yeah, I see it over there. There's the sign.
So I'm just waiting on Neil to come join me, but it seems he's perusing this store full of fine, sustainable goods. We'll see how long it takes him to get over here. Right now, I am in a store surrounded by all sorts of clothing and shoes and bags, a lot of them made of leather, but not all of them. And so I've asked Neil to come down here to see if he can figure out which is leather and which isn't. Were you just shopping right now?
Oh, yeah, I was having a look. There was some food for hedgehogs over there. I don't know what that's all about, because I thought this was... I don't know. Tell me more about the shop.
Yeah, so they have all sorts of really interesting items, but, like, they value sustainability. So a lot of the stuff that you buy here is stuff that you really use for a long, long time. And as you can tell, like, one of these products is leather, so...
I love the smell of leather.
Yeah, but it's not the only thing they sell here. They also sell a lot of sustainable products made from, like, organic materials. And so I have three pairs of shoes, and we're going to play a little game. First of all, really importantly, how many shoes do you think are produced worldwide a year? If you had to guess.
I don't know. Okay, let's say 2 billion?
2 billion, more like 24 billion.
Oh my God.
By one estimation that I've read. And so then if we're talking about leather...
You meant leather shoes.
No.
Oh, sorry.
No, I meant total. Total. Oh, total.
Well, then, of course, I would have said 24 billion, of course.
Yeah, when it comes to leather shoes, some estimations say that maybe over half of the shoes that are produced worldwide are made of leather. And of course, that ties back into the meat and dairy industry, which has a huge carbon footprint, which is part of the reason why we went to see, you know, what's better. So I have three pairs of shoes. Some of them are made of leather. Some of them are not made of leather. Can you guess which shoes are which?
Okay, well, on the left-hand side, we've got a sneaker type shoe, a white shoe, white laces. It looks like it might be leather. In the center, we've got a hiking boot. Brown, looks very sturdy. That, to me, looks like leather. It's a kind of shoe that, you know, you also would make with leather. And on the right-hand side, it looks more like a tennis shoe, also white. That, to me, looks a bit artificial. But I'm just seeing the price tag. It's not artificial, is it? This is leather. It's 200 euros. That's got to be leather, right?
Is it?
Can I have a look?
Yeah.
So it's made in Portugal. Made from corn waste, bamboo, and organic cotton.
Yeah, right? Interesting, huh? What about the other white tennis shoes? What do you think? You've been burned once before, so...
But these are also 200 euros. Why is it that shoes... Is this... I don't know.
It's that we just don't earn that much money. Yeah, that's the problem.
What are these made of? Let's have a look at the label here. Oh, got it. Oh, it says Glattleder.
So, you're going to have to translate for the non-German speakers out there.
It's smooth leather, right? But this, to me, actually, it feels like plastic. The hair doesn't feel like leather to me. So that's real leather. The other one was bio-based materials. And the one in the center here, this hiking boot... oh my God. Okay, 440 euros. You know, I buy hiking boots regularly. I never pay this much. I want to know what this is made of. This is yak leather? This is made of yak?
That's why it's over 400 euros, man.
Oh my God. Okay.
Did you just sniff it?
Well, I met a yak once and he was very whiffy, so I just thought I'd give the shoe a sniff. I see belts over there. I'm just going to nip over there because I do need a new belt. I just want to have a quick look at the price range.
Can I follow you?
Of course. 389 euros for a belt made of horse leather. Yeah, I think we're leaving.
So one reason I wanted Neil to take a closer look at those shoes is because shoes can tell you a lot about leather's environmental footprint.
Okay, shoes is a good example because even now it's nearly half of the leather used produced in the world goes into footwear. The process for making anything...
That's Kerry Senior, the director of the UK Leather Federation. He's, incidentally, a really good person to talk to about leather because he's an environmental scientist with a doctorate in microbiology. We're going to come back to him in just a second. So with half of all leather going into shoes and the footwear industry worth well over $400 billion and growing, thanks to greater consumer spending power, especially in Asia, that means demand for leather is also going up. And interestingly, this desire for leather is also driving the vegan leather industry. Because turns out a good number of consumers want the look and feel of leather minus the killing of animals or minus the eye-watering price tag. That slice of the shoe business is already worth about $39 billion and is also growing. They both leave behind an environmental footprint. So which one is better for the planet? Let's start with leather. Most of what you find in the store is not made from yak, like those 400-euro boots that nearly gave Neil a heart attack. It's generally cowhide. Before those leather shoes end up on the shelf, they've taken quite a long journey. And a quick warning, their journey starts in the slaughterhouse. Once a cow has been slaughtered, its hide needs to be either refrigerated and transported to a tannery ASAP, or it needs to be preserved in salt to stave off microorganisms. That's how untreated hides can be shipped across the world without putrefying. Next is the tanning process. There are generally three ways to tan a hide. I'm
speaking in very general terms here, which would be chromium tanning, tanning using synthetic chemistries, or vegetable tanning, which uses plant extracts. Once the skin has been tanned, the hide's been tanned, it is then in a stable state. It won't putrefy, which is obviously the intention. And at that point, the hide or the leather, the part processed leather, will go into a finishing process, which will impart the final kind of characteristics.
And that finishing process, meaning the look and feel of the leather, will be different depending on whether it's going to be used in car seats, handbags, or, of course, shoes. So that's more or less how leather gets made. And if you were keeping count, there are a lot of environmental factors involved. First, there's the issue of raising cattle. Livestock causes around 12% of all of our greenhouse gas emissions, according to figures from the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization. The FAO also says that if you only take the agriculture sector into account, livestock is responsible for about 40% of those greenhouse gas emissions, and most of that comes from beef and dairy. And let's not forget about water. It takes, on average, over 15,000 liters of water to produce 1 pound of beef. And all of this is really important for understanding where leather's CO2 footprint comes from. Most of it, over 80%, comes from the livestock industry. That's according to a review published by UNIDO, the UN Industrial Development Organization, back in 2017. But that doesn't mean the tanning sector's pollution is negligible, which brings us to the next environmental concern, waste management. Most leather is tanned using chromium sulfate, and if improperly managed, chromium sulfate can transform into a compound called chromium 6, which is a carcinogen, and can also become a toxin in the local environment. One study in 2023 by a Bangladeshi university found that leather shavings containing chromium were ending up in local bodies of water. They also noted the use of tanned waste in poultry feed and fertilizers, which could then also end up back in humans. But Kerry argues the big problem here is waste management, which he says is not unique to the leather industry.
In certain parts of the world, things are not done as they should be. And you can pick any number of industries in these parts of the world and see the same poor practice, the same lack of care for the environment, for workers, for whatever. It's not an issue for the industry, it is, for the leather industry as it stands. It's a bigger issue of commercial activity in the world today.
And And finally, there's, of course, the big question of animal welfare. Critics say leather production is contributing to animal cruelty because most of these animals are raised in cramped conditions solely to feed the world's growing appetite for beef and dairy. And some claim for shoes and handbags as well. But that final point is one Carrie says is just plain false.
Okay, it's a popular misconception that animals are being reared to make leather. The value of the hide does not make that in any way economically viable, particularly as the farmer, the actual person who's rearing the hide, gets absolutely no return for it.
According to Carrie, cowhide in Brazil would fetch maybe $6. In the UK, maybe as much as £25 sterling, not even 2% of the value of the meat the cow produces. There's basically very little financial incentive to sell these hides to tanneries. So if you're wondering why those leather shoes cost so much, the short answer is the price is related to the manufacturing process, not to the value of the hide itself.
So the notion that cattle are being reared for the hides is entirely misplaced.
Okay, so that's a quick overview of leather. So how does vegan leather stack up? Just on a side note, in the process of making this episode, I was told by one salesperson that there is no such thing as vegan leather, much in the way that some people take issue with vegan meat being called meat. It's either meat, or in this case, leather, or it isn't. But whatever you want to call it, more and more people want it, especially in Asia, which is where over 30% of that demand is coming from, according to U.S. marketing research firm Spherical Insights. And here's where artificial leather would be the more apt term, because most of what's being sold is not 100% plant-based at all. In fact, a lot of it is plastic.
They are working with fossil-based raw materials. The main polymers which I use are polyvinyl and polyurethanes up to now. And both polyvinyl and polyurethane are mainly made from fossil resources.
That's Michael Meyer, a professor for additive manufacturing of bio-based materials in eastern Germany near Berlin. He's also the CEO and scientific director at the independent Freiburg Institute, FILC, which researches leather and artificial leather technologies. Michael says bio-based materials tend to be about 4 to 6 times more expensive than materials derived from petrochemicals, like polyvinyl and polyurethane. And when it comes to their environmental impact, there's no question of their harm. Not only do petrochemicals contribute significantly to the chemical sector's carbon emissions, but the plastics they make aren't biodegradable and are releasing microplastics into the environment. Leather, on the other hand, can, depending on the tanning process, decompose within a matter of weeks. A pair of shoes, 50 years, according to Carrie. But what about artificial leather shoes? Michael says, before you get to biodegradability, you need to think about durability. Take shoes made of cactus or mushrooms, for example.
This is, again, a very interesting question. Cactus and mushroom-based or mycelium-based. These are completely different. Mycelium-based is produced by biotechnology. So these are fine hyphae, like a fungi, and the stability is not as well as we can observe it for leather. So it's a completely different procedure to make these fibers. For example, making a shoe from this, you can make an opera shoe from this, but you cannot make a hiking shoe. It's not possible.
So those opera shoes or dress shoes might be worn for a long time because they're not used so often. But using artificial leather for a shoe that needs to be worn a lot, well, Michael says what's on the market is unlikely to hold up as well as leather. One way manufacturers are trying to compensate for this problem is by using plastic polymers, which are also cheaper than bio-based polymers, to improve durability.
The cacti-based materials are in principle PVC or polyurethane-based synthetic leathers filled with cactus fiber or cactus leaf powder.
Which, of course, means when they enter a landfill, that polyurethane will take decades to break down. And the microplastics it will leave behind will never fully decompose. What does make these many and varied alternatives to leather so intriguing, whether it's plant-based or fruit-based, there's anything from apples to mangoes, is the potential to upcycle natural waste from the agriculture sector. For example, a pineapple-based leather that uses hundreds of pineapple leaves to produce 1 square meter of artificial leather. Or in the case of cacti, growing a plant that absorbs CO2 and uses little water. In the end, though, the use of fossil-based plastics would be decisive, and so would the impact of scaling up these smaller businesses.
If we, for example, talk about the pineapple fiber-based materials, they are made from pineapple fibers. It's okay. In the local production, it works. But if you scale it up, you get something like a paper industry. So you have to deliberate much amounts of water, and this is cost expensive. So you have a paper-making process in principle.
Earlier, Carrie pointed out that cattle aren't being raised for their hides because it doesn't pay off for the meat industry. And I want to come back to that point because this also plays into leather's environmental footprint.
In the world today, probably around 90% of people eat meat. As long as you eat meat, there will be hides and skins. If you do not use those hides and skins to make something, you have to throw them away. You're talking in the order there of, you know, 1 billion hides and skins a year being produced by the meat industry. If we don't make leather, we have a waste issue. We also have a substitution issue in that if you don't put leather into products, people will put something else into products. And as we said earlier on, that will inevitably be plastics, because the next gen materials are not at any kind of scale to substitute leather yet.
So again, looking at the environmental footprint, reducing leather's impact needs to start with tackling the footprint of the meat industry. For consumers, it would also involve trying to figure out where the leather itself came from, though admittedly, and Carrie says this too, that's easier said than done. He says traceability needs to improve because it's entirely possible that the hide for a pair of leather shoes made in India might actually have come from Brazil and then might have been tanned in China. And this sleuthing won't be much easier when it comes to non-animal-based leather shoes either. Even a product labeled bio-based might not be as sustainable as a company claims. For example, Michael and researchers at Filk found in one study that a brand using cactus claimed it was free of toxic chemicals and PVC, but in fact, it contained polyurethane and several restricted chemicals, something consumers would not be able to figure out on their own. Michael says it's exciting to see how fungi and plants are being used to make leather alternatives and to see how technology will improve their uses in the future. But he also stresses that their shortcomings largely come down to their role in the natural cycle. Fungi and plants are not built to protect a body in the way an animal's hide is. And here he says it's important to talk about the place of meat in society.
Carbon footprint of the meat industry is as well a very important topic. And one can discuss this very intensively. The challenge is ruminant. So cows, sheep and goats are transferring cellulose, which is not digestible by humans, into digestible protein. So it's important. But intensive breeding of animals with soy or plant-based proteins, it can be a problem. But to transfer cellulose to a digestible protein is very, very important that we can use it and do it. And this is the discussion we have with the colleagues from the vegan mindset. I think it's important to discuss always and to have in mind the whole cycle of nature, not only parts. And animals are part of the biocycle.
The final question we need answered to figure out the environmental impact of leather versus vegan leather is how long will it be until the other shoe drops, leather or otherwise, right into the trash can? After all, the benefits of even the most environmentally sustainable shoes are only as long-lived as those shoes are worn. So a material that can't be repaired or worn for years isn't doing the planet any great favors.
So Kathleen, what is better? Is it leather or is it synthetic shoes? Can you give a clear answer on this?
I've been dreading this question ever since I started writing the script. So I'm going to preface this by saying this answer is based on where the technology stands now. If you're talking about, let's say you're sitting in the States and the next state over, they're making plant-based shoes from like corn waste, or you're in Europe and there's something with apple waste, and it doesn't have a long way to go to get to you, yeah, it's going to have a much smaller CO2 footprint and like lower greenhouse gas emissions, then I would say the answer is clearly a plant-based shoe would be the better alternative. But that's only talking about the beginning of the life cycle. So if you're looking at the bigger picture, you can't get away from the fact that, you know, livestock is part of the reason why leather has such a huge impact on the environment in terms of using land, using water, greenhouse gas emissions. But if you're talking about actually using one of these shoes and comparing these two examples, I would say there's a stronger argument for leather overall because it's more durable. It's something you can use for decades. And it's more biodegradable because even if you have a plant-based shoe that has a high percentage of whatever plant-based material, the fact of the matter is these companies are still very reliant on polyurethane, on PVC, which are fossil-based resources. And when they break down in landfills, they leave behind microplastic. And there's no way to get around that fact.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so plant-based, you've got reservations there. Scalability, etc., durability. But I mean, this whole complex with also the meat industry, etc., and the fact that we seem to be on a bit of a leather drip because it's a byproduct that otherwise just goes to waste, so we might as well use it. But I mean, what if, you know, just assuming that, what if the world became vegan?
What if the world became vegan?
Yeah.
Well, then that would go back to what Michael Meyer was saying from Filk, which is, you know, we should really be asking ourselves, okay, there are these fantastic technologies that are being used to make a product that imitates leather, but there is nothing on the market right now that 100% imitates leather, as things stand now. You have the problem with durability and being able to use these materials in the same way as you can leather. So we've been talking about shoes, but of course, leather is used in so many different products that, yeah, that would also be the question, like, is it really worth developing a technology that could potentially become very energy and water intensive, depending on what you're using? For example, like mushroom based is very energy and water intensive mm-hmm. because you actually have to grow the mushroom. It's not a natural byproduct in the same sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if we became vegan, I mean, I would assume based on the research that, yeah, that would probably lower greenhouse gas emissions and land use in the way that livestock uses it, because livestock, that's like a third of our cropland on the planet is used for livestock. A quarter of the planet's land that isn't covered by ice is used for livestock. So in that sense, it would be better. But that would be assuming like we would just not be using these animals for anything.
Yeah. I mean, of course, there's also then the problem or the possibility if we went all out vegan, that then synthetic would just take over, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing that critics bring up a lot, because it's still heavily dependent on fossil-based materials. Because to fully mimic what leather can do, they haven't found a way yet without using polyurethane or PVC. And what I also found very difficult in researching this and very enlightening reading this report that Filk did, which is, to my knowledge, the most thorough kind of look and an independent analysis of like different products that are being labeled as vegan leather or non-animal based, was that like to really know what exactly is in these products is very difficult because the companies aren't fully disclosing everything, which is not uncommon. But there was one point, for example, like in this report where they even found a vegan labeled product that was PETA approved. It was made of eucalyptus and pineapple fibers. It actually contained leather.
So how does that happen?
So basically, like, there were three layers that were used in this material, this leather-like material. So the top layer was embossed microfiber material. The back layer was PVC-coated textile. And the middle layer was made of what's called leatherboard, which is basically like the leather shavings. So something that would go to waste anyway. Now, that's a really extreme example. It's really, really strange. But, you know, their findings in general of like what percentage exactly of PVC or polyurethane is contained in these materials, I think just goes to show that if you want something that is environmentally friendly, you can't forget to think about plastic. And you can't forget to think about what plastic does to the environment in terms of microplastic, because that is part of these shoes. Mm. It just is.
So, I mean, where does that leave the consumer then? Because I'm also thinking, you know,
go barefoot. Go barefoot is basically what I'm recommending at this. I mean, like, how many pairs of shoes have you bought for yourself this year?
I've bought this year, let me think, two pairs of shoes.
Okay, well.
And they're for sports, both of them.
Yeah.
One is for running, and the other is just a pair of sneakers that I wear to work as well. I'm actually wearing now.
Well, yeah, I was looking up surveys to see how much, like how many pairs of shoes people own on average. And according to one survey from the States, Americans on average buy about four pairs of shoes a year and own about 12 on average. I found one survey from Germany that was saying, this is from 2017, I don't know how true this is, but women apparently own 20 on average. I feel this is a little bit sexist.
I believe that right away.
No, actually, I don't believe
that. Just judging by my wife, seriously. No. She's got way more shoes than I have.
I think the larger point that we keep coming back to when we're talking about consumer goods is, of course, consumerism. So if you are buying a new pair of leather shoes every year and you're buying a new pair of plant-based shoes every year, you know, it's just going to end up in a landfill. That's just more and more ending up in a landfill eventually. And if people are really honest about how long they're using these products, and yeah, if they're wearing something for decades or if they're only wearing it for a year or two, that's, I think, the larger issue with this particular good.
But just, I mean, also with consumer perceptions regarding leather, because I mean, I grew up always, leather was, it was like a luxury product, right? Mm. If it's real leather, that's special. You didn't buy that often.
You know, there is the growing trend that people want to do something good for the planet. And if you look around, there is also a huge perception that buying a leather product is contributing to animal cruelty. Mm. And that is driving the demand for leather, which, based on the value of the hide, because the value of the hide isn't even worth 2% of what the entire animal is worth. So to go to all that trouble, basically, if you want to put it that way, to raise an animal, to slaughter it, and then, yeah, just for the value of the hide, that doesn't work out mathematically. So I think in terms of perception, that's also a really interesting point. But that's actually something I wanted to ask you about, because we didn't really talk about animal cruelty all that much. And you did an entire series on meat. Were you reminded of some of the stuff that you had to work on with? I mean, you saw an animal slaughtered, for example.
Yeah, two calves. Yeah, I mean, the animal cruelty side of things, it's... I mean, just from my experience doing that series back then, it was just so theoretical, and you just push it away. You don't really think about it. You know, you have your steak on your barbecue, and there's no connection to what actually happened before or went before that. And just seeing that firsthand, I mean, personally, I would recommend that everybody does it and witnesses something like that, because for a time, at least, it really makes you more self-aware of your own meat consumption and what it means. But yeah, there's no doubt about it. The meat industry, factory farming, our demand for meat, just having meat in supermarkets comes with animal cruelty. There's no way they can do it without. It's just a space issue and a timing and money issue. You have to be fast. It has to be efficient. And the animals are transported long distances, terribly cramped conditions. It's horrific what's happening every day.
I mean, yeah, I think that's just part of a larger discussion. But to me, you know, a big takeaway is... the fact of the matter is we have this product, and to throw it away, to throw animal hide away, is also a huge waste. Mm. I think that merits more discussion. But I also feel like something's going to fall on my head for implying that that in some cases leather is not a bad environmental choice in that sense. That we're talking about, tricky, and even you're giving me that look like... Do you have something else to say about plant-based shoes?
No, I don't. But maybe our listeners have. Maybe they can write in, let us know, send a voice message if there's anything that you want to contribute, or if you have a strong opinion on this, or if we got anything wrong, please let us know.
Today's episode of Living Planet was produced by me, Kathleen Schuster, and edited by Neil King. Our sound engineers were Ziad Abu-Sleiman and Jan Winkelmann. For more great episodes of Living Planet, go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And be sure to hit subscribe. If you have any questions or maybe there's a story you want to hear, we'd love to get your email. Just write to livingplanet@dw.com. Living Planet is produced by DW in Bonn, Germany.
Before we go, I'd like to tell you about another interesting podcast that covers in-depth stories of the climate crisis. It's called Climate One, and I think their show pairs really well with ours. Climate One is an American program hosted by Greg Dalton and Arianna Brochus, two journalists who've been reporting on the environment for decades. Each week, they go beyond the headlines, interviewing experts of all kinds, from artists to international business leaders, about how their work intersects with climate change. You'll hear conversations with US luminaries such as conservationist Jane Goodall, policymakers Gina McCarthy and Ali Zaidi, climate scientist Catherine Hayhoe and writer Rebecca Solnit, just to name a few. New Climate One episodes are released each Friday. You can find the show on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.